Good morning, New Covenant, or whenever you might be listening to this teaching. My name is Jeff Trask, and as always, it's my honor and privilege to be able to share with you today. Today, we are in the third Sunday of Advent. This is the Sunday known as the Joyful Sunday. And there's joy associated with this Sunday because of the anticipation of Jesus coming on earth. Keep in mind that there were numerous Old Testament scriptures predicting the coming of the Messiah, and this timing ranged from the days of Moses and scriptures early as Genesis 3:15, all the way down to Malachi 3, chapter 3, verse 1, which spanned 1,000 years. And then when you add the fact that there was another 400 years in between the last prophecy and Jesus actually coming, you can imagine the anticipation that might have been in place here. To try to draw an equivalent, it'll be as if someone in the year 624 AD made a prediction and prophecy of a coming Messiah. 624 AD marked the time of the Roman Empire, the Persian Empire, the very beginnings of Islam in the Arabian Peninsula, the Tang Dynasty in China, early medieval period in Europe, the Mayan civilization in South America, the Kingdom of Askim, which is in Africa, modern-day Ethiopia, and the Ghana Empire. So imagine during this time period, the peoples around the world started to predict this coming Messiah. And then here we are 1,400 years later, after those initial predictions and 1,000 years of predictions and 400 years of silence, then this Messiah finally comes. Imagine the anticipation there. So sure, it had to have been joyful. I imagine if you were a believer during that time, you might have thought yourself one of the luckiest people on earth to be able to be alive and be a generation to witness the coming of this Messiah. So this third Sunday of Advent is remembering the celebration of that day when they're anticipating Jesus' return. And we can also anticipate Jesus' return on our end today. As a believer, we believe that Jesus will once again return on earth and usher peace on this earth. Imagine that. Peace everywhere. Imagine a world with no violence, no hunger, no one left out in the cold, no poverty, no hatred, no sickness, no suffering. It tore my heart apart when I was in Chicago recently and saw women and children out on street corners in this Chicago cold with nowhere to go, with nowhere to stay. Our Jesus returning will mark the end of that type of suffering. It's probably why we have that Christmas song, Joy to the World, the Lord has come. And this brings me to the title of my teaching, which is, We Will See Jesus Again, But Not Yet. And I get that phrase from a movie called Gladiator, which I thought was a really good movie. And one of the scenes basically has a main star who's basically fighting for his life. He was a commander of an army, and then he got turned into a slave and then turned into a gladiator, and his wife and child was killed. And he otherwise had no motivation to survive, but he had a particular goal and purpose in mind before he could go to see his wife and kids in the afterlife. And so there's this phrase in the movie that says, you will see your wife and kid again, but not yet. And so I would say that we will see Jesus again, but not yet. So in the meantime, we have to, what we learned in church growing up, we have to run this race. We had a lot of songs, a lot of phrases of running the race for God while we're alive. And this metaphor is basically used to run a life for Jesus. Because as believers, we are running this race to build God's kingdom in the time that we do have on this earth. So while we eagerly anticipate Jesus' return, we have to also turn towards him in the meantime and race towards him. I'm going to highlight a few things I believe that are critical in running the best race we can until Jesus' return. And I just want to break these down in three things. There's lots of ways to run the race, but I'm going to talk about knowing yourself, finding purpose, and evolving. So knowing yourself, finding purpose, and evolving. So there are a lot of people and things that will convince you or try to convince you that you are something that you're not. Whether it be family or friends or the media or social media, the community or society, there's a constant barrage of messaging telling you that you are anything short of God's creation. Now, that can be very damaging and can affect your ability to run your race. I mean, imagine trying to run a race with a whole bunch of baggage on your back. And I have a picture of a guy with a bunch of suitcases in the airport. Imagine, you know, it's hard enough to run a race by yourself, you know, without anything to carry. Imagine trying to run a race with a whole bunch of baggage. So regardless of what you are told, the truth is that you are beautifully and wonderfully made. What the world may perceive or say is wrong about you is not what God created you to be. And God created an amazing world. I'm going to back up and start off the fact that we're talking about the same God that made the whole known universe, a whole known universe that has 2 trillion galaxies and so many stars, so many billions of billions of stars, that they will outnumber the number of grains of sand on the entire Earth. That's 10 to the 24th power. That's a one with a lot of zeros. The same God also created the Milky Way galaxy, which is one of those trillion galaxies I mentioned. But each galaxy itself has 100 billion stars. That's more billions than any of the rich people we have on this planet. And among these 100 billion stars is our sun. Our sun is 1 million times the size of the Earth. And on this Earth God wonderfully gave us is the state of Mississippi and the city of Clarksdale. And in the city of Clarksdale are our Spring Initiative faculty and staff, along with the Spring children. And I have to throw in there along with my granddaughter, Amaya Josephine. We need to do this again just to really let it sink in. The God that created you is the God that created the whole known universe with 2 trillion galaxies, with each galaxy having 100 billion stars, with just one of those stars, our sun, being 1 million times the size of the Earth. And the big old planet Earth, the state of Mississippi, you find there, in the state of Mississippi in Clarksdale, you find Spring, along with my grandson, Amari Chico. When you think about that, that is something truly to rejoice. Philippians says, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. So given that we are the creation of this wonderful God who created the universe, why in the world would we not know our true selves? Well, there's a long history of this country trying to convince people that they are different than what God made them to be. And no group has had this happen more to than Black folks, African-Americans. There's an example that Dr. Joyce DeGruy, who wrote the book Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, talks about, where she observed white parents and Black parents with their children. And the white parent will have their, say, this 10-year-old child. They will talk very positively about the 10-year-old child and all the wonderful things they're involved in and do. And meanwhile, Black parent may oftentimes, while they're still proud of their child, will often say negative things about their child, just as almost like a verbal reflex. And so she wanted to investigate this and see what is going on here. Why would Black parents, despite being proud of their children, still talk negatively about them? And what she discovered is that when you do the history and look at the history of slavery, what has occurred is that over the years, there's been this behavior that has transcended generations. And this behavior started in slavery because if a slave master came to observe the children of a slave woman, of an enslaved woman, that enslaved woman would try her best, or try the slave man would try his best to talk down about their child so that the slave master would not be interested in that particular child, whether it be taking that male child away for sale or from other types of labor, or take a woman child, some slave child away for breeding or some other type of purposes. So to talk negatively about your child was a protective mechanism to try to keep your child from being taken away by the slave master. And so over the generations, this behavior, unabated, has still continued to this day. And so that is just one tiny example of how we can lose who we actually are in God's eyes, in God's creation. I have this diagram to kind of show just a few examples of how things in society like slavery and Jim Crow, discrimination with the GI Bill, redlining, and so on and so forth, all playing a part in making Black people feel that they were not the full person that God intended them and created them to be. And just as another example, or more so for as an exercise, I want you to imagine Santa Claus right now. Now, when you imagine Santa Claus, I wonder how many of us imagine a Black Santa. I'll try it again. Imagine a picture of Jesus. How many of us listen to this? Imagine a picture of a Black Jesus. these type of images have a lot to do with how people perceive themselves and how they perceive themselves in the world and their part of society. We have been instructed almost to think of people in different ways, in different ways that God intended us to think about each other. And it's really difficult sometimes to recognize that. I mean, it's almost like you have to run this race and they're calling your name to get on the starting line, but you don't know your name, so you don't know that you're supposed to be on the starting line. Therefore, it's critical to know and understand yourself so that you can run the race properly and not be victim to believing what this world thinks you are or ought to be. The second thing I'd like to talk about briefly is the idea of finding purpose. In order to run a good race, you have to find purpose. And know that purpose can be multiple things. You have multiple purposes simultaneously, and the purposes can change over time. But it's key to find something that inspires you, that excites you, that energizes you, and gives you the opportunity to give something to the world, something beyond yourself. Philippians says, "Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near." When I was growing up, I developed a purpose early on in age where I just hated seeing people suffer in any way. Matter of fact, when I was 15 years old, I devised this whole plan to end poverty in the world. I even drew a diagram of a city where problems would be solved and was able to convert the entire world from poverty to everyone at least being okay and not having to suffer. God put this idea of helping others in my heart from an early age. And that purpose has led me on many different paths. But they all have led and continue to lead in the same destination, which is helping others. We live in a broken world that's really good at breaking people. And I like to think of myself like a society mechanic, trying to fix things best I can and help heal this broken world. And each of us should always contemplate, you know, what's one of our purposes? What's one of our current purposes? Is it helping others? Is it being good in school, being a good friend, being a good neighbor, being a good brother or sister, being a good mother, father, being a good grandparent, or just trying to change the world? Having purpose is vital to running the race. They've done statistics and studies in workplaces and found that money is not the top motivating factor for anyone at work. But what motivates people more than anything else is having meaning and purpose in what they do. And finally, the third area I want to cover briefly is the idea of evolving. And evolving involves three major things, in my opinion: learning, unlearning, and relearning. Someone once said that our minds are like concrete, thoroughly mixed up and permanently set. So we want to do the best we can to break up that concrete and be willing to unlearn some things, learn some things, and relearn some things. For example, how many of us listening to this had to unlearn the purpose of the Statue of Liberty? I shared this in a previous teaching, but the Statue of Liberty was not about immigration at all. It was about the celebration of the freedom of African Americans from slavery. What's interesting is that the person who designed and had the idea of the Statue of Liberty was a abolitionist and was friends with abolitionists in the United States. And he wanted to make a point of this by designing Statue of Liberty with shackles in her hands. So what you see as a tablet was originally supposed to be shackles. And to this day, the compromise ended up being that the shackles were still part of Statue of Liberty, but they're on her feet instead of in her arms, which, by the way, you cannot see unless you're in a helicopter looking from above, looking down on the statue there. And to add to that story, what I did learn recently at the symposium on reparations, author Joyce DeGruy that I mentioned earlier actually made a point to not only make sure that history was highlighted and was put front and center, but she actually even trained the Rangers to share that history with tourists. So now, not only do they have the original diagram of the Statue of Liberty prominent for those to see, they also have their tour guides being able to share that history and share that story so many more people can unlearn what they had known, thought they'd known about the Statue of Liberty. So besides unlearning, there's also things we have to learn. Like, for example, I learned that the United States fought two wars to try to keep slavery from being over. We all know the Civil War is one of those wars, but many people don't realize that the American Revolution was also fought in large part, some historians say mainly so, to maintain slavery in the colonies. Matter of fact, it was the institution of slavery itself that gave the colonies the economic freedom to be able to even stand up against Britain in the first place. So in general, we just have to be aware of the fact that there's so much of history that we do not know, so many things that we have to unlearn and things that we have to learn. And what it all comes down to is what we often call critical thinking, being able to think for oneself. And the best thing you can do to run this race and know who you are and have purpose is to do research and study and be able to think for yourself. I was surprised that when I did some research about vaccine hesitancy among African Americans, I asked a question, why don't you want to take the vaccine? And what source of information do you use to make that decision? And not only did I ask that, but I also asked them, what made you trust those sources of information that led you to making your decision about the vaccine? And what you often find is that once you dig deep enough, many people don't really know what the true source of the information comes from and tend to believe whatever they're told on the surface level of things and not digging deeper. And so, again, in my opinion, to run a successful race for God, this world is so often backwards of what God wants it to be that we have to be able to think critically and think for ourselves to be able to run a good race. So while we don't know when Jesus will return, we do believe that Jesus will indeed return. And when he does, this world will be everything God intended to be. But in the meantime, our faith should lead us to run that race the best we can. I'll end with the rest of Philippians. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Amen.